frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I make music with my friends.
He's got lots of.
There it is.
He's got lots of.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
A rough start, but the duct tape and baling wire is hold for the moment. Ha! Well, I need to learn how to type and spell. Anyway, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, as well as if you scroll down underneath there, you can click on the People for People radio banner link ad thing. And stuff. Alright, so it's a miracle I even got here, because as soon as I tried to fire this thing up today, I had to, I don't know, guess my gremlins are giving me an attitude today. It's snowing really bad outside. Tree limbs are breaking underneath the weight of all the wet snow that's clinging to them. And I tell you what, man, it's something else. Steven said, like with flying and landing, you can walk away from is good one. And rough start better than not getting started at all. Laugh out loud. Good morning to you too, Steven. it was kind of frustrating. But anyway, speaking of frustrating, let's talk about some emergency stuff here. Emergency heat and power. You know, a lot of people don't think about that kind of stuff until it actually happens, but the power grids, they come up and they go down, they come up and they go down, especially in weather like today, we got out here, so if I happen to disappear, it might not be because I was abducted by aliens, it might just be because the power went out. I mean, after all, I did have a hard time just getting logged on here today. Boy, I tell you what, it was a chore. But anyway, we're here. Duct tape and bailing wires holding up pretty good so far. So far, so good. Knock on wood and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But, so I got a couple podcasts that I want to play to give you some things to think about here for a second. The first one, because I always like to go to from the best case scenario to the worst case scenario. You know, the most to the least. The best thing would be if you had some sort of emergency backup. So here's a deal with top five. These are the top five generators out there, according to somebody's top five. And they're like emergency backup power systems. And so I'll play these right here. This is, I think this is actually a compilation of their actual ads. So bear with me. We'll get this. We'll get through this thing together. Don't panic.
Each week, an average of 3.5 million Americans will experience a power outage in their home. In a two-year span, more than 70 million experienced an outage that lasted more than 24 hours. Storms come and storms go.
He said Americans. Well, I'm thinking this is a worldwide kind of issue here, and some people don't even have power. But I just had to jump in there because that kind of, I don't know, that got me.
But what happens when the power goes? According to the latest national averages, a power outage can do more than leave you and your family in the dark. It can drain your pocketbook. Think of what you have to lose without the backup protection of a Briggs & Stratton home standby generator. $150 a night in a hotel, plus a good night's sleep in your own bed. Over $200 in lost, spoiled food. No, not the waffles, pizza, and ice cream. Oh, you don't even want to know what a flooded basement will run you. $1,900 for cleaning and thousands to put in new flooring. About $3,000 to redo the walls. A few hundred to repair the furnace and AC. Oh, then there's the mold removal. Figure another $3,000 for that. Or you can make one small investment in a home standby generator from Briggs & Stratton and not think twice about it. What you stand to gain outweighs what you have to lose. Night lights are important. Keeping them healthy and well-fed matters. Alert and refreshed, ready for the day. And at the end of the day, you can look back knowing you've done your part to maintain your household without letting something as unavoidable as a power outage stand in the way of your family's comfort and well-being. So, what do you have to lose? Home standby generators from Briggs & Stratton, the power experts for more than 105 years. And the name nearly 60 million households rely on every day to power their outdoor equipment. These aren't just standby generators. They're generators that stand by you.
And now, we're proud to announce our newest product, the Champion Home Standby Generator. Designed and engineered in the U.S., our 8.5 kilowatt home standby generator is the perfect choice for providing your home with a permanent source of backup power. In the event of a power outage, the Champion Home Standby Generator automatically starts and delivers continuous electrical power to your home. And since it's connected to your LPG or natural gas system, it never needs refueling. Our innovative gullwing design provides easy access to the engine and control panel for simple installation and maintenance. The enclosure is a durable, all-weather design that will protect the generator from the elements while also being highly resistant to rust and corrosion. Additionally, The Champion Home Standby Generator comes with an all-weather composite mounting pad for easy installation. This easy access design allows a full view of the onboard control system, which controls all of the functions of the home standby generator, including utility monitoring, automatic transfer switch control, automatic start and stop functions, automatic weekly testing and exercise functions, and fault indications. The Champion Home Standby Generator comes with an innovative 24-volt starting system. The system is designed to ensure that the generator starts reliably under any temperature, ranging from negative 22 to 104 degrees Fahrenheit. The onboard battery charger maintains the battery charge 24/7 to ensure plenty of starting power. The Champion-designed 439cc single-cylinder overhead valve engine is strength and reliability combined to provide 8.5 kilowatts of power continuously on LPG fuel, or 7.5 kilowatts continuously on natural gas fuel. The Champion-designed synchronous alternator is made of 100% copper windings for maximum power, while producing less than 5% total harmonic distortion to ensure safe use with even the most sensitive electronics. This 8.5 kilowatt rated unit produces 35.4 amps at 240 volts on LPG and 31.5 amps at 240 volts on natural gas. We know that sound matters, which is why we designed the Champion Low Tone Muffler, which reduces noise through a unique sound attenuating baffle system within the muffler and the enclosure. This, along with the sound dampening material lining the interior of the unit, makes the Champion Home Standby Generator the quietest in its class, just 59.5 decibels under normal operating conditions. The Champion Home Standby series is backed by a 5-year limited warranty and is ETL tested to UL 2200 standards for the US and CUL standards for Canada. The power of Champion, with our innovative power solutions and legendary customer service, places the customer as our number one priority.
Think you couldn't afford an automatic standby generator? Well, think again. Introducing Generac's brand new PowerPack 7kW automatic standby generator system, able to power your most essential circuits automatically. Its compact galvanneal steel enclosure is great for protection against the elements and is extremely rust resistant. It also allows for it to be installed as close as 18 inches away from a home or a building. All of your power and control wire connections are available on the outside of the generator for fast installation, and 3 of the 4 sides come off for greater serviceability. The unit also has a true power alternator which provides less than 5% total harmonic distortion, or THD, to power your most sensitive electronics. The power pack features a digital LED display for the controller interaction. It's available in its own viewing window, so you don't have to open the actual generator enclosure to get at it. The backlit LED buttons are bright so that you can always know what status it is in, and you can set the exercise automatically by simply holding down a button. It also is compatible with the remote monitoring MobileLink device, which allows you to monitor your generator status from anywhere you are, from a tablet, smartphone, or a computer. The PowerPact is also an extremely quiet unit, especially when compared to portables. Its galvanneal steel enclosure has sound-resistant foam on the inside to further deaden the sound emissions. Portable generators, on the other hand, are open frame. You have to plug extension cords in it and run it to the appliances that you want to power. Also, you have to keep it filled with gas, which, in the middle of bad weather, may not be the most convenient thing to do. Automatic standby generators are hardwired into the home to provide power to the essential circuits that you've already selected automatically. It's also going to run continuously on natural gas or LP, so you don't have to worry about sloppy refills of gasoline or shutting it down for a while before it keeps going. Just a safer, better alternative. Hello everyone, my name is Jake Thomas and I am Generac's product manager for our air-cooled standby generator line. I'm pleased to introduce to you today the very first 22kW air-cooled backup generator. Now not only is Generac the leader in the backup generator category for the U.S., but we also realized that there was a value barrier for people that needed more than 20kW. So we decided to embark on the path of creating the very first 22kW backup air-cooled generator. Previously, if somebody wanted to get this much power, they would have to use a liquid-cooled system, which is easily double the cost, So this is the best value in terms of backup power. It also comes with all the great features that people have come to expect from the Guardian product line. It features our Generac OHVI engine built right here in Whitewater, Wisconsin, our innovative Evolution Control. It also comes in an all-weather aluminum enclosure to protect it from the elements, which can be installed as close as 18 inches away from a building. Not only does this generator also provide the largest amount of power available in an air-cooled backup generator system, it also uses our True Power technology, which provides less than 5% THD, or total harmonic distortion. For more information about the Guardian 22kW backup generator, log on to Generac.com.
Okay, that last one was Kohler. It's like, no, you would. It's just like a loud and obnoxious commercial, so I don't want to play that one. It's just a bunch of video of Doomsday and all that kind of jazz. So anyway, the best case scenario, obviously, if you could afford to get you some sort of backup system that is already connected to your house and it automatically turns on, that's the best case scenario, of course. But not everybody can afford that, so, you know, we got to think about some different things because, you know, you never know, worst case scenario could happen, maybe it won't happen, who knows. But there's, you know, a lot of things that most folks take for granted and don't even think about. So I kind of wrote down things to research and have just for such an emergency. Obviously, number one, you'd probably want, you know, a lot of good, heavy-duty, really warm blankets. That would be a plus. So if you got a bunch of blankets stored up on your shelves and all that kind of stuff, maybe get you some of them bags that you can vacuum seal to keep them all dry and fresh in case of just such an emergency. You can break them out and have you some warm blankets. And, you know, there's something to be said about having enough of them for your house. You know, a lot of folks don't even really think about this stuff. It's like the electricity as far as the way you can just go over there and turn the light switch on and then suddenly the power goes down and, you know, you just like got to wait around sometimes it may be an hour depending on where you're at. There's some people that have been without power for days. And there's other people in other countries probably been without power for years. So those would be the best ones to ask for how to get through those rough times during the cold spells such. You know, during the heat, it's just as bad. You got to have an alternative plan. So you need to, you know, before anything ever happens, actually get you some sort of plan. So, you know, just write down a list of things that you normally wouldn't think about during the worst case scenario. So I got on here, I got blankets, I got candles. You know, candles is something that you're going to have common sense with because, you know, you don't want to burn your house down while you're trying to stay warm inside your house. That's not a good thing, but, you know, they can be a good little source of lighting. And actually, they have some little cheap old lanterns that you can put those little tea light candles in. And they'll actually put out just a little bit of heat as well when they're inside those little containers and things. They actually look like old style, you know, kerosene lamps or something like that. But you can find those out at some of the little thrift stores and stuff like that. It'd be good to have a few of those on hand with some candles for just such an emergency. You need a little bit of extra lighting or something like that. Maybe even an extra little bit of heat. Now, I was watching a few videos. I was going to play a couple other podcasts of what people do off a grid. I might play this one here in a second. But it's about solar power. And, you know, there's a little system that you can actually buy that'll give you some, you know, some little bit extra power. Now, keep in mind, this we're not talking about it's going to be able to run your entire house or anything like that, but it'll give you, you know, some power source to charge up some lighting and maybe use some small appliances for a while. And then after a while, try to get into a little bit of battery storage and stuff like that. So, blankets first on the list, candles, Rubbing alcohol is something a lot of people don't think about. I saw this in a video. And basically, you take an old coffee can and you get some rubbing alcohol. They come in different percentages. You want to get some pretty good percentage if you're going to use it for this particular purpose. But anyway, to make a like a little short-term type a heater, in this video, they actually took this a roll of toilet paper and stuck it down inside of a coffee can, and then soaked it all down with this rubbing alcohol. And what that did was it didn't burn the toilet paper. It used the toilet paper like a wick, so that you could actually burn the alcohol. And as long as you kept an eye on it and watched to see if there was any charring or anything like that, if it started to look like the toilet paper was charring, I mean the toilet paper was burning, you're running low on alcohol. So you'd put it out and then, you know, put some more alcohol down in there and get quite a few uses out of it. That would be an emergency thing, that if you had alcohol in your medicine cabinet or something like that, that you could use that for an emergency heat source. Of course, once again, common sense and safety, always being aware of safety, fire safety. That's the biggest key right there. You don't want to burn your house down. And if you use any of the traditional style wood burnings or even different types of kerosenes or any other types of fuel sources, you always want to make sure that you got it's well ventilated. So this is the reason to start your plan ahead of time. So get your family together and start talking about, okay, what would we do if the power went down? What could we use to survive on? You know, there's things that you do, you got around your house that you probably don't even think about. For example, emergency water source. You know, have you ever thought about your hot water heater? Like if you got a 40-gallon hot water heater, that's not a very big hot water heater, but if let's say hypothetically you got a 40-gallon hot water heater, and for some reason the power goes down and the water stops coming out of the spigot, and maybe the power's down citywide or something like that, and it's got the pumps at the water company ain't working, or maybe the water towers, so you use gravity fed systems or dry or whatever, and for some reason you just don't have water coming through your pipes. Maybe there was a pipe break up the street and they had to shut the water off in order to fix that. But either way, there's 40 gallons of water in your hot water heater. Now, depending on how old your hot water heater is, some other things you might want to take in consideration, such as water filtration. So if you got a 40-gallon hot water heater, I wouldn't necessarily suggest drinking straight out of the hot water heater. But you could clean that water up and have an emergency water heater or emergency water supply. And here's another one a lot of people don't think about. There's at least a gallon or so in the back of your toilet. Now that sounds disgusting. We're not talking about drinking out of the toilet in itself, but the actual tank. Unless you're one of those ones who like that blue chemical that you put inside your toilet bowl thing so that every time you flush it freshes up your toilet. Which is probably not a good idea, because some of those chemicals actually rust up your parts inside your toilet and eventually cause you problems that you have to fix. But if you ain't one of the ones that's done that, there's usually at least a gallon or more of fresh water in the back of your toilet, in that tank that holds that. So there's two emergency water sources right there. And, you know, if it's snowing outside or whatever, and you go out and you get some fresh snow, you can melt that down and, you know, purify that. I always suggest, even if you get it out from outside or wherever you get your water, those types of scenarios, to have a good filtration system on hand to, basically keep yourself healthy and well hydrated. So you can go out to different shopping centers and you can do a little bit of research on water filtration systems. They actually got pitchers that you can put water in, and they have built-in filters that it will filter the water before you pour it into your glass. So that's another thing to think about right there. And, to the extent you might even have to get your rain barrel or something like that. Gather up the rainwater off there in case something goes awry and you have to be able to you know, flush your toilets and stuff like that. You could have some 5-gallon buckets and use those to carry water in and out. You know, it's a pain in the neck, I suppose, but it's better than nothing if you have to. You have to be in a situation where you ain't got power or water. So, you know, we've talked about blankets, candles, rubbing alcohol. The rubbing alcohol, not just for medical use, but also for, you know, case you have to build you a little temporary stove out of an old metal coffee can or something that, you know, something metal that you could put that inside of and light it up. One thing about that, you know, the rubbing alcohol is not going to put off the carbon monoxide fumes. It burns pretty clean, so you'll be fine with that. There's no carbon involved in it. The next thing in line, probably most important, second most important, because water would be the most important, you want to make sure you get some sort of food, something that you don't have to cook and something that you don't have to refrigerate. Something that'll give you, you know, enough energy to keep motivated until, you know, things clear up and you get to the store and all that kind of stuff. You know, just things that you normally wouldn't think about, you know. So, a food, dried foods or, you know, things that don't have to be refrigerated and things that'll last quite a long time on this on the shelves in case you have a long term episode. And so you know, with the food, I also wanted to talk about modified appliances. You know, if you're in the dead of winter and have a power outage and all that kind of stuff, there's no reason to be having your refrigerator plugged in and using part of your emergency backup power to run your refrigerator. Because if you planned ahead, you could actually cut a vent in a strategic spot in your refrigerator, remembering always that heat rises and cold air falls, so maybe in the top of your refrigerator you could customize a vent. It might be even a marketable idea if you actually made it now to build an actual refrigerator that was specifically designed for during the winter time. You don't use the compressor like you would during the summertime, and you could pipe cold air from outside the house into your refrigerator, and that cold air would fall down. You could actually even have it thermally regulated so that if the temperature inside the refrigerator got too cold, then you could basically just shut the vent off on its own. So, you know, there's a possibility right there. But that would keep your food fresh, because if you're trying to stay warm inside the house and you got some sort of heat source going on, you got to remember that refrigerator, if you open and closing that door, is going to start to warm up to the room temperature. And most foods don't like to be kept at room temperature before they start to spoil and stuff. So that'd be something to contemplate on. You know, with a few minor modifications to different types of appliances out there, you could actually get these appliances to run on less energy than they would have required otherwise. You know, when you're talking about running things off of AC current or whatever like that, you know, right now, most of the things we have are energy hogs. And so with that said, you know, thinking ahead of time, getting you a fan that runs off of 12 volts or less and a good battery storage, some inverter systems for any type of AC, AC appliances that you might run. So let me play this one right here real quick. If I can get this up here.
Hey YouTube, this is City Prepping. In this video, we're going to take a look at the Kodiak Solar Generator. This is a product that's been on the market for a little while. And it's a revolutionary technology and a very lightweight unit that has many, many applications in a grid-down SHTF scenario. In this video, we're going to take a look at some different uses. We're going to talk about the features of this product. And we'll look at some of the different competition on the market. And again, we'll just do a little more of a deep dive explaining how this actual unit works. Spoiler alert,
I actually really, really like this. I've been wanting one of these for quite a long time, and I'm glad I was able to get a hold of one. And so I'll go through, I'll give you my honest opinion, I'll share the pros and cons. And so let's talk about this more, and let's jump in. Here's what we're going to cover in this video. What makes a solar generator so unique? Features of this unit? Why you'd want this in a disaster post-SHTF scenario? I'll do a quick overview to explain how a solar generator works. We'll look at the primary competition on the market and how this stacks up against it. We'll run some tests using the product. We'll discuss EMPs in relation to this product. And finally, we'll cover some of the downsides of solar generators, especially compared to gas generators. So what makes a solar generator so unique? And why is this technology a game changer for preppers? The first reason is the one that sold me personally. You have an unlimited fuel source as long as you have the sun. There's no reliance on gasoline. Another reason is that you can charge it up to 2,000 times. Their primary competitor only has 1/4 of this ability, which we'll discuss a little more in a moment. And it has a 10-year shelf life. These points were the primary things that sold me on the solar generator as an option for a backup power source for when the grid goes down. I spoke with an individual recently in Puerto Rico, and she spoke about the lack of gasoline and the impact it had on her family. I've also read a lot of forum postings after Florida was devastated by Hurricane Irma, and one of the common issues people brought up was the lack of gasoline and their inability to run a generator. So let's take a look at some of the features of the actual unit itself. On the front, we have an RV plug-in, 6 110 VAC plug-ins, 2 Basecamp LED ports, 2 12-volt DC car sockets, 4 USB outlets, a battery storage indicator, and a power switch and power display. On the sides, we have a high current charging port, which can handle up to 600 watts through the Nutric port. The cool thing is that while the generator is charging, you can still power other devices. A low current charging port, an external battery bank connection. And this is one of the other unique features of this product. You can chain this with other batteries. Again, something their competitors cannot do. I'll do a video on this shortly showing how to expand this out. Also, you have a heat vent as well as two on the other side. So let's take a quick look at the solar panels.
Two things real quick I want to mention on there. This unit that he was talking about, the first thing is that batteries. There's one thing that a lot of people don't think about when it comes down to emergency backup power. And that's that you're running directly off of this generator to run your house. But you could also use that that same generator to supply power to charge up your battery bank. So let's say you have a shed with a massive battery bank with large inverters, and you have this generator that is normally set up for emergency backup power, and so it has a certain amount of fuel that it's going to use unless it's connected like natural gas or whatever. But if you use this this generator strategically, you could actually charge up a large battery bank, and then the generator would shut itself down, and then it would watch the battery voltage that when you're running now, you're running your all your appliances and everything off of large inverters that's connected to your large battery bank. And so you only have to have this generator come on every now and then in order to keep those batteries charged up. It's just something to think about. The same thing with the solar generators, to where the solar generator is actually using solar power to charge up a built-in battery bank, and those can actually be connected to a larger bank so that you'll have a lot longer storage. So that's a plus right there. But the other thing is that because those inverters inside there are producing heat, you heard him say that this had a heat vent system on there, because transistors and power MOSFETs will actually produce a lot of heat, and they have to have heat sinks on there. So because this particular solar generator isn't producing any kind of gases like carbon monoxide or anything like that, then you could actually leave this in your room and actually have it as a supplemental heat source to help keep that room warm while you're actually using that electricity. So that's something that people might not have thought about, that if you're using an inverter, those inverters are actually going to produce a little bit of heat from the circuitry inside there. That's why they have to have a built-in fan to keep them cool, and that's a plus. So you, instead of having your inverter somewhere outside or in the shed, have them right there in the room with you or whatever. Just leave the batteries themselves, somewhere where they can be vented as well, because sometimes batteries, depending on what type of batteries you got, will produce hydrogen, and you don't want to have any risk of any kind of, hazard going on there. So I'm going to finish playing this.
Power the generator. I picked up 550-watt panels that are very lightweight, portable, and fit in a bag, providing me with roughly 250 watts to charge my generator. Again, remember this unit can handle up to 600 watts of power from solar panels. You can chain these particular solar panels together with a connection point they have on the side. Each of the power cables that connect to the solar panels can handle 150 watts of power each, meaning I had to use one cable on three of the panels, which produce 150 watts, and the other cable for the other two panels, which produce 100 watts, and then connected the two cables into a three-way adapter with a Nutrik plug-in that plugs into the side of the generator. Whew, that was a mouthful. So why would you want this for an emergency SHTF scenario? When the grid goes down, having the ability to produce electricity would be critical for so many reasons, especially for those with health issues like diabetes, requiring them to keep insulin cool. Also, people that use CPAP machines often purchase these as a backup. You'll also want to be able to refrigerate your food. I will be adding a small refrigerator soon in my garage that uses less power as a backup if the grid goes down. One of the things I especially like is that, unlike a generator, it is quiet and it produces no fumes, which is critical for OPSEC. In addition, you don't have to do maintenance on it like you would on a gas engine. It also has a very lightweight setup. The solar generator itself only weighs 20 pounds, and the five panels I have a combined weight of another 25 pounds. The solar generator and the panels would definitely be items I'd throw in my vehicle if I had to bug out. Now, the possibilities are endless for things you would want to power in a grid down scenario. Things like your computer, where you store critical information like survival documentation, ham radio and cell phones, which would be very important for communication. You'd want to be able to power your TV and tablets for entertainment purposes for your kids. Okay, so let me give you a brief geeky explanation of how a solar panel works. Okay, so they advertise this unit as having an internal battery capacity of 1100 watts. So what does that even mean? Without going into a long, boring discussion of electricity, let me put that in layman's terms to give you an idea of what you could power with this and for how long. Your typical home appliance in the United States uses 110 volts. That's the normal wall socket you have in your house. Now, every device uses a certain amount of amps. Some use more, let's say like a coffee machine, whereas your phone would draw a very small amount of amps. Most appliances list the amount of amps they use on the side. So a watt is simply amps times volts. If you start looking around at different electronic devices in your house and take note of how many amps they use, you can start figuring out very quickly how many watts they'll consume during normal usage. Let's take a look at something you'd want to power after a disaster. Let's say a small 18 cubic foot refrigerator. It draws about 2 amps during normal operation, with a momentary surge of roughly 6 amps when starting up. So a fairly accurate estimate in this example of how much we would expect it would use would be 110 volts times 2 amps per hour times about 20%. Now, refrigerators don't operate all the time. They run roughly 20% of the time. So within 1 hour, it would use roughly 44 watts, and over 24 hours, about 1,056 watts.
However, if you had that refrigerator slightly modified, or even made you a emergency refrigeration system that wouldn't require no power, then you could actually pipe, let's say like you got a access to a window, and you take some old dryer duct and you make this thing that you can set up inside the window, because we know that cold air falls. You can actually take and put a thermometer through an old cooler or something like that, put your food down inside there that you don't want to spoil, and allow that cold air to go down into the cooler itself, not directly into the room, but into the cooler. So you could use the cold air from outside to do the job of the refrigerator, and it wouldn't take you any kind of refrigeration at all, without actually sticking your food out there on the front porch and then the wildlife run off with your biscuits and gravy and such. So you don't want that. So anyway, a regular refrigerator could actually be modified to do the same exact job. So all those wattages that he talked about and the amps that it would draw, that wouldn't even be something. So the more you can save on your storage bank, the better.
With this information, you can start getting a general idea of what you would be able to power with this device and how many panels you would want to pick up. Again, remember the solar generator can handle up to 600 watts of power coming in. So how does this device stack up against competition on the market? The closest competitor is a Yeti 1400. So let's do a quick side-by-side comparison of the two systems. And by the way, all this information below can be found on both manufacturers' websites, which I'll also post in the description section below. So let's first look at the weight. The Kodiak comes in at 20 pounds, whereas the Yeti 1400 comes in at 45.7 pounds. Are these systems chainable? In other words, can you hook them up to external batteries to charge them and to also draw the power off? With the Kodiak, yes, and with the Yeti, no. The charging life cycle of the Kodiak, you can do up to 2,000 charges, whereas the Yeti only gets 500. How many watt hours can it produce? The Kodiak can give you 1,500, the Yeti's 1,425, so they're very similar there. The recharge time from a wall for the Kodiak comes in at 9 hours, whereas the Yeti takes 24 hours. Regarding how many watts you can pull in through solar panels, with the Kodiak you get 600 watts, and with the Yeti it's 240 watts. The recharge time, and again this is at maximum capacity using solar, with the Kodiak you can do it at 2.5 hours, and the Yeti is at 6 hours. Now regarding the price point, the Kodiak, with the 10% coupon I'll post in the description section below, actually is $100 less than the Yeti. So, side by side, the Kodiak is definitely a hands-down winner in my opinion. So, let's use this powering some appliances and devices around the house. Alright, so let's look at some power tools. A miter saw. Two drills at the same time. A blender, an espresso machine. What prepper doesn't need a good cappuccino when the world is falling apart? Am I right? So let's talk about dealing with EMPs. They actually sell Faraday bags that you can store your solar generator and solar panels in if this is a big concern for you. These Faraday bags are actually military grade. So let's talk about what many will most definitely point out in the comments section as potential downsides of this product. The first and most obvious will be the price tag. Yes, they are more expensive than a gas generator, especially once you add in the cost of solar panels. They're not as powerful as a gas generator either at a comparable price point. Yes, you can get gas generators at a cheaper price point, but then you'd have to keep gas on hand, which would be a limited, finite amount, and once gas runs out, that's it. With the ability to charge the battery 2,000 times on the Kodiak, that means you would have roughly 5.5 years worth of use out of this, which to me would be worth every penny in a prolonged grid down scenario. So regarding the interface was obviously designed by engineers. It's not overly friendly or easy to understand. Goal Zero definitely does a better job with theirs. But once you get an understanding of what information is being displayed on the panel, it makes sense, but there's a small learning curve for sure. So here's my final thoughts on the Kodiak solar generator. I think it's a great investment as a prepper. Again, it checks all the boxes for me and stacked up against a primary competitor on the market. It's a clear winner and something I definitely want in my inventory of survival gear. Solar is something I've been researching for a while, and I'm honestly glad I have this. If you're interested in knowing more or picking one up, I'll post links in the description section below, along with a 10% off coupon. I'd be interested in hearing your feedback and thoughts on this unit in the comments section below. And if you enjoy the video, please feel free to like or share on social media. As always, be safe out there.
Alright, so that's a battery backup basically. And while I'm on that subject right there, a lot of people have APCs, automatic power control units that are set up to basically, or UPS, I can't remember what all the different terminologies, basically a battery backup for your computers so that if your power goes off that it will give you 15 minutes to shut your computer down, or at least enough time to shut it down without just having it up and crash so you can save your stuff and your information or whatever. But Those particular deals could actually be modified to have a longer term shutdown, so that whenever the power is on, that automatic power supply will actually be charging a larger battery bank, so that if the power goes down, that it will still, you'll still have some AC power for long periods of time after the you know, power goes off. But most of those have a doggone beeper inside of them, and so whenever the power goes off, it will sound an alarm, and so you'll hear this constant "wee" going on, and it'll drive you insane for a while. So if you really wanted to modify some of these, and a lot of times you can get these things dirt cheap at flea markets because the batteries go bad and the batteries are more expensive than the whole doggone unit to replace and all that. But if you pick up some of those and get you some regular you know, lead acid batteries or whatever type of batteries you have available for you, you could you know, modify these things. Each one of them might take you know, anywhere from 12 to 24 volts system inside, or you have to look at the battery configuration inside. But if you, if it's, let's say hypothetically it's a 24 volt version of it, then you're going to want to run you know, all your 212 volt batteries in series, and then a whole bunch of packs of series 12s running parallel. So if you got rows of two, one of them series 212 volt batteries is one row. The next one in line is another two running series, and then you run all those series ran in parallel with each other. And the more you have, the longer the storage capacity is. So by doing that, you can get one of those APCs to be a battery backup system that you can keep your computer or whatever on for long extended periods of time. Basically, it's almost like a free inverter, and of course, you're not going to be able to run your refrigerator off of it, obviously, unless you got a really big one. They actually do have really big battery backup systems like that for, you know, companies and stuff, and some of those aren't really cheap to buy, but, and they take a lot of batteries to get them started. But either way, it's still something to look into, because sometimes you can get lucky and buy some of them because the batteries are bad. You can turn around and you know, put your new battery bank on there, and it'll fire right back up and do the same job it was intended to do. So, you know, I said that I was going to go from you know, best case all the way down to the you know, worst case or whatever, so that everybody has at least something, you know. And speaking of something, you want to make sure that you have all kinds of first aid needs met, you know, in case of emergency. I'm going to see if I can add Raymond up in here. Hold on a second here. This might get obnoxious. Yeah, there we go. Try that. So, you'll want, we've mentioned blankets, candles, rubbing alcohol, food, modified appliances, first aid, water, and radio and communications, which a lot of people don't really think about. And a couple of little walkie-talkies could be the difference. Like if, let's say you were burning firewood and somebody went out to cut firewood, you could have communications back and forth with them, make sure everybody's all right and all that kind of stuff. So that's a good deal. And, you know, cell phones, grid down type scenario, cell phone might not even work. You know, it depends on whether the tower has a backup power or, you know, whether they're on top of their game or whatever. And in that last pod, the guy had mentioned EMPs. I wouldn't even stress over that. But if you're really seriously worried about it, you can make a cheapo Faraday cage out of an old galvanized toolbox, or, you know, anything that's going to keep any electromagnetic pulse from getting back to the deal. I hear myself echoing. How you doing, Raymond? Raymond!
Yeah.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Am I too loud over there?
No, I heard myself echoing in the background.
I think I got my heater on. I just turned the heater off. Is that better?
Yeah, that's good.
All right, sorry about that.
So, Let me see here. Where were we? Store information. That's another thing. while you're out there getting ready for your survival kind of thing, look up for all kinds of different books on how-tos for everything you can possibly imagine. You know, you'd be surprised the things that you don't think about, that maybe one day you had something going on, there's like alternative medicines for a toothache, and if you're in a grid down scenario where you can't just get up and call the doctor or something like that, there might be something on your shelves already that you have that, you know, to help you out. So how to's stored in book form, or even get online and print out a bunch of information, everything you can possibly imagine, for medical to electrical, alternative heating, and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, store your information on, you know, like flash drives and hard drives and, you know, backup copies and stuff like that. That, you know, small appliances like a laptop you can run on these little power sources that we talked about, so that you can, you know, keep them charged up with solar as well. So you about to say something, Raymond?
Yeah, earlier you mentioned tea candles and different sources of heat.
Yeah.
And so those Coleman lanterns that campers use,
yeah,
they're cheap, and a gallon of Coleman fuel, if you were to run that lantern all day long, it would last 2 or 3 days, 1 gallon of that fuel. It gives off a tremendous amount of heat. A small room like a bathroom, you couldn't stay in the room for the heat. Well, I mean, it would heat a large room, like a living room in a house, and plus give off light, more than enough heat to where you could actually put your sandwiches in tinfoil and put them close to the lamp and heat your lunch. You could even heat soup.
Yep.
Those Coleman lanterns or something else. There again, you mentioned tea candles. I just bought some tea candles for some experiments I'm doing on some heat engines. There's 100 of them for $3 at Walmart. That's 3 cents a piece. And they burn for 2.5 to 3 hours each. And they do put off quite a bit of heat.
Yeah.
One would not warm a room, but 2 or 3 would keep you from freezing to death.
Also, something that people really probably don't contemplate on is that you can not only store electricity, you can store all forms of energy, including air pressure and heat. So, if you're going to be burning a candle anyway, all right, and you're going to be getting just a little bit of heat off of that, if you actually think about it ahead of time before you... before any kind of deal happens, I had this system set up on my wood stove, actually my fireplace. Went out and got a big old, probably about almost 3/4 inch to 1 inch thick steel plating, and put that in the bottom of my wood burner. And the reason I did that was that, while the thing is, burning normal wood, it's heating up that steel plate. And then even when it gets down to the point where the wood's gone and you're just down to the coals, or even the ashes for that matter, it takes a long time for that steel plate to cool down. You see what I'm saying? So that you can store that heat energy.
Talking about your wood stove, I've seen people take... and build their own soaring engines, and instead of a flywheel, they use a propeller off of a model aircraft airplane.
Yeah.
And what it does is the heat from the stove runs the soaring engine, and the propeller stirs the heat around in the house, so you don't lose any of the heat at all, and you wind up with the air circulating throughout the house, and you get a lot more comfortable that way. Maybe you ought to try that with your wood stove.
Yeah, well, also, there's one video that I posted all these video links down in the deal where the lady was showing that when she was running this toilet paper alcohol burner, that the heat rising from that actually was spinning her ceiling fan. Because it's, you know, when heat rises, it produces basically a current of air going on where the
cold
and the heat mix. And so, if you think about it, and you
add up... I'd like to bring up, as far as number one, that alcohol deal, That's very good, because alcohol puts off a tremendous amount of heat. But there is a danger that people need to be very aware of, and that is that alcohol burns with almost a colorless flame. And there have been many, many people scarred for life because of accidentally spilling alcohol on them while trying to make one of these stoves and light one. And the alcohol lights up and they can't see any flame, but yet they're sitting there burning and they're on fire. So just be careful if you're using alcohol stove. Very yeah. careful. Secondly, you mentioned using a generator to keep your refrigerator going. Say, like, for example, even in the summertime. The main thing about a generator and a refrigerator is, like, for example, my brother, they had a hurricane. He was without power for 5 or 6 days, but he didn't worry because he had a 6,000 watt generator. And so he would run his generator 20 minutes every 2 hours just for his refrigerator, and he wound up losing all of his frozen food, about 150 pounds of meat. But the thing is, what he didn't realize is that it doesn't run like that. You plug your generator into your refrigerator into your generator, and you let it run until the motor on the refrigerator turns off. That means it's as cold as it's going to get. Then you unplug your refrigerator. If you open the door, you're allowing the cold air to fall out and the hot air to go in. So if you open the door and you shut it, you plug the refrigerator back in and listen for the motor. If the motor does not start, you're good to go. If it does start, let it run until the motor turns off. If you do not open the refrigerator, you're good for any work, 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah, but here's the thing. What I was talking about is basically modifying your refrigerator. If you're talking about a wintertime scenario, because you can spoil your food in the wintertime just as easy as you can, because you're trying to warm the inside of the house. You don't even need your refrigerator plugged in with minor modification to that refrigerator. You can pull cold air out from the outside and let it downdraft through the refrigerator so that you're not using any power. So worst case scenario, winter time, you shouldn't be powering that refrigerator. You should have a modified system so that you can actually take advantage of that cold air from the outside. Now,
right.
Obviously, that's not going to work in the summertime, but there's other methods by, using heat transfer and stuff.
I've got an energy-saving suggestion for people, even when it's not an emergency situation. If you've got a refrigerator and you open the door to your freezer, if there's nothing in there, you're doing wrong. If you don't keep your freezer full, then you deliberately keep it full. Take an empty milk jug, fill it 2/3 to 4/5 full of water, put it in there and let it freeze.
And blast it.
In the freezer. Let it freeze. What's happening is if you get your refrigerator full of frozen, either food or water, and you open the door, there's only a little bit of flare that can fall out. When you shut the door, that frozen food and frozen bags of water, bottles of water, will cool that hot air. And there's only a little bit of it. You want to keep your refrigerator as full as possible. If you don't have food to put in it, put bottles of water, plastic bottles, so they don't bust. All right? That'll save you a tremendous amount of energy throughout the year. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're having a technical difficulty here, so we should be back up and going. Doggone power fluctuated there for a second. All right. Do-do-do-do-do. Trying to reconnect over there. All right, folks, we're having a technical difficulty. It's that power outage we've been talking about. So I think we're back up and going again. You still there, Raymond?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So anyway, even during the summertime, there's ways, like you mentioned there, you can supplement your deal to help your appliances run, but there's all kinds of things to factor in. Like, for example, what I just mentioned, I lost power there for a brief second, just long enough, and it could be very well possible I'll lose power altogether because there's a lot of tree limbs covered down with snow, and they might cause some problems outside. So hopefully we can get this
show. Is it snowing up there where you are?
Oh, yeah, it's probably a good foot of snow.
Oh, man.
So, let's see.
It's all good for me to teach weather here.
Yeah. So, so we talked about storing information so that you'll have a doggone information whenever the power goes out. I kind of got distracted from that whole deal. Let me check and make sure something's going on here.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Alright, there we are. We're on there. Ah, what a mess. Alright, so sorry about that, folks. Had a temporary fluctuation in power. This is what we're talking about, and this is the reason why you need to be prepared. So you need to go, first, we talked about blankets, candles, rubbing alcohol, food, modified appliances. First aid is a really important thing, especially if you got medications that you would normally have to get out to get. You'd have some on hand, extra, or whatever. Water sources. We mentioned about different types of water sources that are available in your house that you probably didn't think about. Radio and communication. We talked about that. A couple walkie-talkies and maybe CB radios or whatever kind of two-way devices you can get like that in case cell phones ain't working. Storing information, books, printouts, information that you go out and download on the internet, and now lighting, different lighting sources. Raymond mentioned getting a bunch of like 100 candles for $3 or something like that. Those little bitty candles, and they actually make some little lanterns that you can put those things in. I mentioned those earlier. You can get some little cheapo lanterns, or you could actually probably make you some. So next thing in line, like LEDs or really low powered but bright lights that you can get a hold of would be a plus. So that if you're going to be lighting up your house, it's obviously you don't want to have like a 150 watt element running off of your, a tungsten element light bulb running off of your doggone battery backup, because that's going to drain the power pretty quickly. But LED systems, you can get quite a bit of light out of LED systems that'll keep you from very least stubbing your toe. The whole key about all this stuff, folks, is you got to have a plan.
You mentioned making a homemade alcohol stove.
Yeah.
Vegetable oil works just as good as alcohol, and it's a whole lot safer, and it burns longer.
Well, there you go. There's another plus.
If you got vegetable oil in your house, no alcohol, use that. It'll burn.
All right, so you can basically build a candle out of that, too. So, anyway, they're burning. I need to scroll down over here. So, the key is you want to have a plan ahead of time. So, get your families together. And even if you got some good neighbors, they can have a good neighbor. That would be a good, that's part of inventory resources. So in order to get you a plan together, you get your family and go around and you think about what would you need if the power went off? And how much power do you use now? Look at your electric bill and see what kind of power you use now and where you could actually cut power that you wouldn't have to have. Like, in wintertime, I said if you had a modified refrigerator, or if you didn't want to modify your refrigerator, you could go out and buy an old igloo cooler and some duct work, like some dryer duct, and insulate around that so that you're not transferring that cold air into your house, but hook it up so that in the lid of this cooler, you can have, you'll open your window up and you'll set this deal inside your window and close your window down on it so that the cold air outside can actually drop down into the top of that cooler, and you can put anything that need to be frozen or to stay at a certain, you know, cold temperature inside that cooler. So that's a basically a no power solution that would work during the winter time. And even if you had to do this during the summertime or something like that, there's other methods that you can actually keep things cool. Like Raymond mentioned, freezing up milk jugs and sticking those down inside there. You'd be surprised how long it takes for those things to thaw out. So you got to have a plan. You need to go around and inventory your resources. And what I mean by that is what you actually have on hand. Different types of batteries, vegetable oil, like Raymond said, to make a homemade candle heat source, or rubbing alcohol, medical supplies, blankets. That's a big one that I mentioned right there at the beginning. That's probably one of the ones you want to grab onto first, is different types of blankets. There's all kinds of, even survival blankets is better than nothing at all. Those little aluminum foil ones, what are they, Mylar or something like that? Holds the body.
Oh, heat. I got a bunch of those. They're Mylar space blankets. I got a bunch of those.
Yeah, you can fit a ton of those into a small space, so you'd be able to have a big supply, and actually could use some of those to cover up drafty windows or something like that. But anyway, it's about keeping heat in and cold out during that type of scenario. So if you inventory your resources ahead of time, you'll know what you got around there. And, you know, it might actually require, if you're going to be burning wood, pre-plan, going out there like, you know, most folks do that burn firewood all the time. They, go out and cut a bunch of wood and stack it up and have it ready for just such an emergency that you don't have to go out at the last minute with your chainsaw and try to cut some firewood. You got to be pre-planned. I guess that's why they call it prepping, right, Raymond?
Yes, sir.
So, things you would not think of or normally take for granted, those are the things that you want to probably put on your list. So the first thing on your list is a big old notepad. You know, and get all your family around, give them all a notepad and ink pen. And just go around and write down everything that you can possibly think about that in a worst case scenario you'd either take for granted or not, and then not even think about. And then, you know, even tracking down water supplies. Like I mentioned, your hot water tank, if you only got a 40 gallon hot water tank, 40 gallons is a lot of water. Now keep in mind, like I mentioned earlier, that if you're going to drink water out of the hot water tank, you want to make sure you got a good filtration system first, case your hot water tank ain't in the best of shape. And if you're not one of those ones who like that blue color in your toilet tank, to when every time you flush it supposedly refreshes your toilet, that's about, answer your phone, Raymond. Live on the radio, Raymond's phone.
Hello.
Yay.
What are you
doing,
Jim?
We're eavesdropping on your conversation, Raymond. The whole world is.
I don't know about today, Billy.
Raymond!
Yeah. But so far,
mute your mic, boy!
No.
Alright, well, that's really good for live radio. I told you, duct tape and bailing wire, folks.
It does, because it.
Raymond! Mute your mic!
I'm not worried. I'm not worried.
He can't hear me. He probably muted his headphones. All right, well, that ought to be good for the show. Anyway, so always have a plan. If you got good neighbors, make a plan with them too, so you guys can help each other out. Things you'd not know. Boy, I tell you what, I wish I gotta get me a mute button. Hold on.
No.
I'm going to sort this out real quick. Volume mixer. Raymond, you're killing me, man. Headphones. Let's turn that down. Nope. I can't hear him now. All right. So I'll turn that back up in a second when I think he's off the phone. That's terrible for live radio. So anyway, have a plan. And if you got neighbors that you could be part of your resources, you guys help each other out and that kind of stuff. Power storage is another good plus, is that if you have, you know, even old batteries, if it won't start your car anymore, but it'll still hold maybe 10 or 11 volts or something like that, you could still use that, and you could still store power in that. And you could actually rejuvenate that battery back to its deal. Let me see if Raymond's off the phone yet.
I never had any deals with these people at all.
You still on the phone, Raymond? I'm turning him down. All right, he's still on the phone. All right, so if you take an old battery, old car battery, and it doesn't want to hold a full charge, it might be a case that you can rejuvenate that battery to go out and get you some baking soda and distilled water. You can make up a mixture of baking soda and distilled water, and you can dump all the battery acid out of it. Of course, do this environmentally friendly kind of deal. And then, you know, use something to dilute it and basically neutralize the battery acid. So, keep on pouring that stuff in there. When you pour the baking soda into the battery, it'll start bubbling and fizzing and all that kind of stuff because it's going to start cleaning it out. And then keep on repeating that, emptying it out and repeating it until it no longer fizzes anymore. Then make you a mixture of pickling salt and distilled water, and that'll be your new electrolyte inside that battery, and then you can charge that battery back up and still be able to use it for a backup power source. All right, let me check again to see if Raymond's off the phone yet.
Well, they haven't taken this long to get my paperwork.
Yeah, nope, he's still on there talking about paperwork. Crazy people. Like, right live, right on here on Mad Science. All right, so power inverters, any power inverter you can get your hands on would be something good to store, even if it's only a little 300-watt job, you know, something that puts out a little bit of AC power that might run a cell phone charger, which kind of makes no sense at all to be running a little tiny inverter for. You know, there's maybe you don't have any DC fans that run a little, you know, AC fan at least. So, all these things that I'm talking about are things that you'd want to research in, so that you'd have something, you know, in the works in case something went awry. Man, I got a headache now. This has been something else. All right, let me try to do this again. I'm gonna take a short breather here and play this little podcast right here. Oh, I done muted that.
Different ways that you can heat your tiny house. We're gonna talk about wood burning stoves, propane heat, electric heat, in floor radiant heat, supplementing with solar air heaters, and for each one of those options, we're gonna talk about the pros and cons and important considerations when.
Yeah, hold on, Raymond. I'm playing a podcast.
Okay. Choosing your system. So the first thing you're going to want to do is size your system. You're going to want to calculate how many BTUs your space requires. BTUs is basically just a standardized unit of measurement for cooling and heating. So you can go online, search for BTU calculators. There's plenty of them available. And basically what you do is you fill in your information, and it'll give you an approximate BTU number that you can use as reference when you're shopping around for your heating system.
Wood burning stoves.
So the first option we're going to talk about, and probably one of the most popular, is a wood burning stove. Wood burning stoves are fantastic, especially if you're trying to be off the grid. They provide a nice dry heat, which can help avoid humidity problems. They can also be relatively inexpensive to install.
Okay, I'm going to pause that podcast there. This is five tiny house heating options. But on the wood-burning stove deal, they make all kinds of different sizes of wood-burning stoves. Once again, common sense and safety, so that you are proper ventilated and all that kind of stuff. But these are things that you want to... you know, adjust to your specific needs. If you're living in an apartment complex, it's a good possibility a wood-burning stove ain't going to be an option for you. However, if you're living in that apartment complex, and you get all the people in the apartment complex together, and you say, look, what would we do as a community if, for some reason, the power went down? And you might be able to even get your landlord or the owners of the place to actually think about, you know, some sort of power backup or even some sort of alternative heating source. Imagine you're living in, like I say, a three-story apartment complex, and you don't have no electricity, which means that you ain't got no type of heat unless you got natural gas that you've already got. And, of course, that's not necessarily the safest deal at all. But if you had cooperation with your neighbors and, you trusted everybody, and that'd be a plus, and it'd probably be a miracle in today's day and age. But nonetheless, if you use the basic laws of physics, knowing that heat rises, and you opened up all these doors strategically from the bottom of the place all the way to the top of the place, you could transfer heat from the bottom all the way up through the top of that apartment complex. It means that,
it's a heart complex, or should it? You know, the thing is that a lot of apartments have a balcony, and if you've got a balcony, a lot of people have a charcoal grill out on their balcony. Do not take the charcoal grill inside your apartment.
Yeah, that'd
be
stupid.
From the charcoal will kill you. What you do is you leave the charcoal grill out on the balcony, you light it, and put big pans of water on it. As the water gets hot, you just bring the hot one in the house while the other one is setting out heating. And you just swap them back and forth. That will help. In other words, you heat the water, bring the water in, let it heat the house. It won't keep you warm, but it'll keep you from freezing to death. Let's put it that way. Well, all right, I just wanted to be careful with that hot water. You don't want to spill it on yourself.
Yeah, well, that's why I said that, some supplementary plans ahead of time with your apartment complex would actually have it so that you'd actually have heat when you needed it. But knowing that heat rises and you put a heating system down in the ground level, obviously you don't want some wood-burning stove right out there where you're going to send fumes up there and suffocate everybody in the doggone building, give them carbon monoxide poisoning and all that. No, you want common sense. But if you had a heat source, even if it was just an electric heat source, and you knew that heat was going to rise, most of the heat, if you put it in the floor, you got a good efficiency going on. If you put it in the ceiling, all your heat's going to stay at the ceiling. But with that knowledge, you can help to keep your neighbors warm by sending that heat up, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
And even to the extent where you don't have normal heating, if you've got some sort of radiator style system inside your tiny house or whatever, worst case scenario, if you was really ingenuitive, you could modify your heater from your vehicle to actually circulate hot water while that vehicle's running outside, to circulate hot water in through a radiator system inside that would basically keep the heat on, worst case scenario. And of course, all of these things are going to have to be pre-planned. You know, you have to think about things like that. Like if you actually wanted to have an emergency backup heater source for your house and you pre-planned, you could make some quick connect deals for what do they call that heater in there? Your heater core. the lines that go to the heater core in your automobile, and have some quick disconnects on the side of your house to where you can run these hoses over from your car into the side of your house, which is now running an emergency heat source inside your house, and you leave your car running outside. Now, is that the best option in the world? No, because obviously your car is going to be using a lot of fuel, but if it's a worst case scenario, then it's an option. You see what I'm trying to say here? It's not the perfect option in the world, but even if you got a generator, a lot of these, like the Generac, those are air-cooled. And so you'd actually have to do some modifications to take some of that heat off of that air-cooled engine and transfer it to where you wanted it. But if you had a water-cooled system already, you could actually take then circulate that water instead of through a radiator and just sending that heat outside. You could bring it up inside a modified heat radiator style heat system for your house. And a school bus, those things are so poorly insulated, it's ridiculous. And what, it takes a long time to get one of those things up running, but the once they're up and running, those heaters inside those school buses, they'll run you up out of there. I mean, your average school bus is running probably 220 degrees Fahrenheit because it's a big, you know, diesel engine, or, yeah, most of them went to diesel because gas, you know, is a little bit more expensive or whatever. But nonetheless, if you go study up how
we're talking about emergency power. We're talking about emergency power if electricity goes off. Every vehicle I own, I have an inverter in there that turns 12 volt DC from your battery to 110 volt AC, but it's what's called modified tidal wave. It won't run your refrigerator, but it'll run your just anything that has a heat element.
Yeah.
Or brushes, a motor brushes or heat element. Now, if it's a capacitor start, such as a refrigerator or air conditioner, no, it won't do it. But most of the that you buy at Home Depot or Lowe's, places like that, they're less than $75. I think they're down to around $50 or $60 now. They're 750 watts. Well, that'll run 2 or 3 100-watt light bulbs and a few other kitchen appliances all at the same time. And trust me, 200 or 300-watt light bulbs will give off a lot of heat and a lot of light too. So there's another way, another source of emergency power right there. It's your automobile. Of course, it burns gas, but it's emergency power.
Yep, it's emergency power and emergency heat. So if you go out and study,
it's not just emergency power.
Yeah, if you go out and study up how you keep cutting me off, man.
I'm sorry.
If you go out and study up how the school bus, actually the heating system in the school bus works, and they usually have heavy amp alternators in there because you're running a lot of power as far as fans and all the lighting and stuff like that. A school bus would be a good example of, emergency backup. So actually, if you owned a school bus, that'd be a plus, because then you guys would just go out and sit in a school bus. But also, you got to make sure the exhaust on that school bus is good so you ain't dying of carbon monoxide. I'm talking about keeping the carbon monoxide on the outside of your house that you're, or whatever you're living in, and the heat inside. So if you had a generator system that was modified so that you could actually circulate the what would have been normally waste heat through a radiator style system, and you had that system with antifreeze so that during cold days when it wasn't running or anything, it didn't freeze up at, you know, just like your regular automobile. But those are things, when you got a plan, you pre-plan these ahead of time, you check these things out, and so that you already got them in place for a worst case scenario. But if you had to, and you had these ideas, either written down, or you had them, already stored on your hard drive, or, you know, printed out, or even some how-to books or something like that, then, you know, it'd stink, but you'd have to get out there and do some quick modifications to something to try to transfer some of that energy inside your house to keep you warm. So, what's your thoughts there, Raymond? Did you answer your phone again? Raymond!
Yeah. I've already answered it.
Oh. All right, let me play a little bit more of this podcast here.
And maintain, and they just provide that really nice atmosphere that a fireplace has. Some of the drawbacks of a fireplace or things to consider are that you kind of need to be there. You kind of need to be at home. If you're at home keeping a fire going, if you're living in your tiny house most of the time, it's not really a problem. But if you intend to go away for extended periods, your tiny house is not going to be heated. Your water pipes might freeze, and there's all sorts of considerations there that you got to keep in mind. It can also be challenging if you're in a really cold climate. Let's say you're going to bed at night, and right before going to bed, you feed the fire, you go to sleep, but you wake up at 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning, it's freezing cold, and the fire's been out for a couple hours. If you're living like this for months on end, and you're always getting up at night maintaining the fire, that can get pretty exhausting, so it's definitely...
Alright, so that's one of the reasons why I mentioned earlier about if you've got a wood-burning stove and that's an option for you, then you want to go out and find you some steel plating. You know, half inch to an inch thick steel plating, big enough to fit in the bottom of your wood burner, so that whenever, like he mentioned, getting up and down all night feeding the fire, that's going to stink because now you're going to be miserable, you're going to be tired all the time. Well, this particular deal I've used for years, and even when the fire goes out, you still have some heat left over in that, basically stored heat energy in that metal plate that's up underneath those ashes inside there. Even when the coals are going, the hot coals in the bottom of that fire are transferring to that you know, steel plate. And I even put in a larger wood burning stove that I had. I had steel plate on the bottom, I had a steel plate towards the back, and one on each side so that would store yet even more heat. And even if you're burning just like little tea light candles or something as a light source, you can actually store some heat if you build you a little unit that you can, when that heat's rising up off of that candle, it's heating up that piece of metal. And some of that heat energy is getting stored in that piece of metal. Obviously, it's not something you want, you know, put where you can touch it. You know, you don't want to burn your fingers. But it could also be a, a way to, cook some, food or whatever. Boil some water on top of that deal. So, there's a few things to think about. You can store heat energy. And if you're going to be running, whether it be wood burning or any type of fuel source whatsoever, and like I said, few minor modifications, you could actually transfer some of that heat energy into water and build a supplementary system so that the water itself could act as a storage for some of that heat. Water, different types of materials that you heat up. Rubber is one that a lot of people don't think about. Of course, you don't want a direct flame on that, but nonetheless, heat will store in rubber. It's like that old car tire in the back of your pickup truck in the summertime. You know, the sun went down, you get in the back of the pickup truck, sit down on that tire, and realize that tire is still hotter than all get out because it's been out in the sun all day. It'll hold heat for a while. Plus, it's connected to an iron rim. That's something people don't think about, Raymond. You ever thought about that?
Yes, I did. In fact, I'm glad you said something about an automobile tire. Because, talk about storage of heat. I went outside with my laser thermometer a few minutes back. It was 34 degrees outside. The sun was shining. And I shot the tire on one side of my, on the shady side of my truck with that laser thermometer. It was reading like 36, 38 degrees. I went on the other side, was in the sunlight. It was reading 140.
Well, there
with
you go.
With all that cold liquor, it was hooking up the sunlight and storing heat in the tire itself. Can you imagine what the temperature would have been if I had it behind glass?
Yeah.
With no air or no wind around it? Holy cow. So take an old tire, put it in a box, put a piece of glass in front of it, and pump the heat into the house.
Yep, and, even the worst case scenario, if you had some old tires or something like that and had to do some sort of junkyard modifications, put you some water valves, what normally would have been a decent tire, but now you just destroy it because the tread's gone anyway. So, yeah, you put a valve on one end of the tire and a valve on the other end of the tire, and you hook some water hose up to that thing. And while it's sitting out there beating, sun beating down on it, it's actually warming up the water inside there, and so you could circulate that water through a floor inside your house, and that heat would rise up off of that floor and basically help to warm your house. Just a supplemental heat source. You see what I mean? It's like those solar heat air heaters that they have to help to supplement your heating during the winter time.
Yep.
What do you think?
Yep. I love it.
So, even recycling a few things, when you understand, like dark materials like to attract heat and hold heat and absorb it and all that, so you can take a couple, old junky tires and modify them, the iron rim itself is going to get hot. You could actually try to trap in some of that heat by, maybe putting some, filling that center of that rim up with black sand or something like that. And so that sun beating down on that sand would transfer to that metal, which would also transfer inside that old tire and heat some water up that you're actually circulating through. It's kind of like Muddy's deal that he talked about, putting a dark hose underneath a compost pile. So when that compost is rotten, it's actually getting the water hot, circulating it through a radiator type system. There's all kinds of alternative methods. So even if you're dirt poor, but you live around a junkyard or something like that, or you have things around your house that maybe don't work for their normal purpose or whatever, there's different permanent magnet motors and all kinds of things. One of them's like a 30 volt permanent magnet motor inside of a treadmill. That could be a power source. Old Fisher and Paykel and Samsung washing machines, the direct drive versions of them, the ones that don't have a transmission in them, those are a generating power source. And so you want to do research to see what it is, all the appliances that you got in your house, what could you do with what, and modifications that you can make. Now, always look for the safety precautions for everything that you're doing. Don't matter what it is. You want to make sure that, you're not going to make yourself sick by trying to stay warm. That's counterproductive to what we're talking about. We're trying to keep you alive. But if you do the research ahead of time, then you'll be prepared for just such an emergency, and batteries, storage, even capacitors. I'm working on some experiments right now that been putting videos and stuff out. I didn't do a live stream on Twitch today, otherwise I'd be showing it to you right now. But power storage, the bigger your power storage bank, the longer it's going to last you, obviously. You don't have to get all high-tech and have a massive array, unless you're trying to run your entire house off-grid, which would be nice. And that's what the whole idea eventually for free energy is, to basically get completely off the power grid, using everything from solar power, wind power, thermal, hydro, and so on. And there's also things to factor in whenever you're talking about having a generator. For example, gasoline engines, they don't like to idle, all right, for long periods of time, because they get really super hot. Unless you're taking that heat away, then they won't last as long as, say, a diesel engine, which actually has oil in the fuel. So diesel engines have their pros and cons as well. But some of the pros to a diesel engine is they can be modified very slightly in some instance to run on biodiesels, like, or even French fry oil or stuff like that. You got any thoughts on that, Raymond?
Yes, sir. Vegetable oil, it works better in a diesel engine than diesel fuel, and works better than biodiesel. Biodiesel is only for really cold areas where the vegetable oil would get really super thick. As long as you're down south and the temperature doesn't get below about 40 degrees, vegetable oil by itself is all you need in diesel engine. Do not mix it with diesel fuel. It's 10% more power, and it's non-abrasive. where you normally have to have your injectors redone every 100, 150,000 miles. If you use vegetable oil only, you don't have to rework your injectors, but every 400 to 500,000 miles. And like I said, it's 10% more efficient, more power.
Well, that's a plus. So
the Chinese have used over 90% of all your farm implements in China are run on vegetable oil. Have been since the end of the Second World War.
Cool.
They don't even use diesel fuel.
So you want to look into diesel or gas engines, alternative fuels for both of them, and you want to look into alternative storage for all different types of energy, because if you store up that energy, obviously you can last a lot longer as far as power battery backups, those old APCs or UPSs or whatever the heck they call them. I can't even remember. There's some anyway, battery backups for your computers. A lot of people don't think much about those things. They're only set for like maybe 15 minutes to give you a chance to shut your computer down. They're not like nothing amazing, and they got that annoying beeper in there. Well, the first thing modification is to take that annoying beeper out so that when your power goes off and this thing keeps your computer running, you don't have to listen to that beep. But that battery backup inside there, it's only got enough power to run that thing for like 15 minutes. But if you make a larger bank, you can run that in parallel with that battery bank and that, and you can get hours or days depending on how big your doggone battery bank is. And so that's another thing right there. But those things, you can usually go to the flea market and buy them for dirt, because it's basically the equivalent of an inverter. But it has some smart stuff in there so that if the power goes out, then it's going to, keep the power on that device. But the best thing about it is you can keep that connected to the power grid all the time. And so you always got a battery backup, and it's self-regulating. It'll shut itself off, so that you're not overpowering your batteries. They'll charge your batteries up, and when your batteries are charged up, it'll stop charging, and then so on down the line. But it's self-regulating. So those are already built-in systems on a small scale that you could use for a power backup source. And as large as your battery backup is, we'll give you how much ever time you got, and depending on how much stuff you're trying to run off of that given system. They actually make larger versions of those little battery backups for your computers, but on a smaller scale, at least it would keep small things going. And once again, when those inverters are running, they're actually putting heat out, because those transistors and MOSFETs in the back of there, they get hot. And so it's actually a heat source as well. While you're using that thing, it's putting out a little bit of heat into the room. Every little BTU counts at that point in the game. What do you think, Raymond?
Yeah, you're right there.
So
right there.
There's some options. You know, go out to the flea market, see what you can come up with, and like I said, get you and your family, everybody in your family, a notepad and an ink pen or whatever, and start making a list. Then sit down and talk about your list and find all the priorities. What's the most important? During the winter time, obviously heat is going to be your most important. Water is going to be your most important. Just staying warm and staying healthy and hydrated, and any medicines you might need, that kind of stuff. So not only is this like a, just for temporary, but it's also a long-term kind of survival thing that, you never know what's going to happen. Like right now outside, there's tons of snow weighing down tree limbs and breaking tree limbs off. We got a pretty good blizzard last night. And one of those tree limbs at any given time could actually come down and take out a power line. So suddenly I'm at the mercy of whatever I got around me to survive. We got enough blankets around here and that kind of stuff. And You know, we actually got a wood burning stove, so if worst case scenario, I can fire that thing up and keep it warm inside the house. But if you're living inside an apartment complex and it's not really super well insulated, you might have a few issues going on. That's why you want to get with your neighbors and all the people that live in that building and say, look, worst case scenario, if the power went down, how could we sort this thing out, you know? If you got a good landlord or something like that, maybe they'll work with you to, maybe everybody in that apartment complex will pitch in on getting one of them Generac systems that have like 22 kilovolts or something like that, capacity. And if you utilize that power properly, that would run an entire apartment complex, with the exception, you know, you would have it in your plan that whenever the power goes off, everybody's already got their appliance modified. So if it's cold outside, you're going to be using your refrigerator differently, and you're not running all those refrigerators. So you could still run all the lighting throughout that entire deal, just by budgeting the power. If everybody knows the plan ahead of time, power goes out, you go into emergency mode, you shift over to saving as much power as possible, and you got LED lighting systems throughout the entire deal, so now this generator that you got is not going to have to work really hard to maintain and keep everybody warm. And you got
to... You mentioned something about the water supply. The thing is, if you have a little bit of forward notice that there might be an emergency situation, you could always take some bleach and clean out your bathtub really good and fill it full of water. There you'd have cooking water, drinking water, and washing water. That it's a good source of the storage for water anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of options. You know, even to the extent of saving up your 2-liter bottles, plastic jugs and stuff like that, and rinsing them out real well, and then storing water. And if you store water in a dark space where there ain't no sunlight, then you won't have to worry about it going bad, because it won't grow no algae or anything, as long as it's in a dark space, so that, you know, you can actually keep it cool and clean at the same exact time. But you know, pre-planning ahead of time would be the, you know, basically the difference between life and death. So,
you know, 2 level tablespoons of Clorox bleach in 30 gallons of water will purify it and still be safe to drink. It'll kill any and all bacteria in it.
Well, those are all things that you'd have to write down on your list. Knowledge things that you'd have available for you. You know, and even to the extent of water purification, you know, by building you some sort of a distiller or whatever, you know. An old pressure cooker could be turned into a distiller. And as long as you understood the physics of how that actually works, where you basically boil the water into steam and then recondense it back into fresh water, and all the heavies stay behind, where all the biologicals would be, you know, killed off as well. So, you know, it's all about doing a little bit of research, pre-planning, printing things out, because, you know, not everybody's going to remember all these things, especially in an emergency situation. But you, if you have an old laptop that you can store a bunch of information on, or, you know, print it out, or even go out and get books and have you a plan ahead of time. Yet in questions during that particular point in time, I mean, you got plenty of time on your hand anyway. What you gonna do? The power's out. So sit down and read a book. That'll be amusement and educational at the same exact time. So there's options available. Right. So the things to research, have for just such an emergency, blankets, plenty of them, thicker the better, nice warm, comfortable blankets, even sleeping bags. You know, those are, you know, they got some really impressive sleeping bags these days. Some that, you know, are made for sub-zero weather. Candles, rubbing alcohol, food. And when we talked about food, we also talked about food that doesn't have to be refrigerated. Food that's good protein and carbohydrate value, that kind of stuff, things that you don't have to keep refrigerated. And even if you do keep refrigerated stuff, using your environment to keep things cool, you know, cold air falls, remember that. So you put your, if you don't have access to power, put all your stuff that you want to keep cooler at the lowest part of your house. If you have things that are able to put, you know, a little bit of water in and freeze it and make a block of ice, you know, tuck all that down into a cooler at the lowest spot of your house and, you know, out of the sunlight and all that kind of stuff. That'll, you know, help to keep that cool. You know, back in the old days, they didn't have refrigerators per se. They had root cellars, and some of them, like in the Amish community, had ice boxes. When I say ice boxes, I mean they actually had blocks of ice in them. They didn't have electricity. They froze the ice in the wintertime and stored it up through the, you know, summertime, and that's how they kept things that needed to be kept down to really cold temperatures from going bad. So there's another good resource. If you got an Amish community, go talk to them. Ask them how they do things like that, how they get through the winter and stay warm, and the best ways to you know, get the best efficiency out of heat sources and such. You know, and there's all kinds of different wood-burning stoves and military-style wood-burning stoves. Some of them that are compactable. And once again, safety is the number one priority. You want to make sure that everything's well vented and you don't put any fire in any place that might be, you know, dangerous. If you have a wood-burning stove inside, you clear out an area, you put something non-flammable down that this thing can sit on, some bricks or something like that, big old metal sheet or something, anything to keep any sparks or whatever, the safer you can make that ahead of time, the better. And, you know,
in the old days, out in the Great Plains area, there weren't any trees for people to cut down and make firewood. So the people that lived in the Great Plains in the summertime, and they would go around, send the kids around with a wagon and a horse, and pick up buffalo chips, which is nothing more than dried buffalo dung.
Well,
and they would store that and use it for fuel to heat their house in the wintertime and cook their food. Well, dried animal, the dung will burn.
It's an energy source.
Sheep manure, cow manure, you name it.
It's an energy source.
It won't burn, it smolders, but it does give off heat.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things. Even that junk mail that you get. You know, you could actually use that junk mail. You know, you just have to look into it. Go on YouTube, look up a bunch of how-tos, download your favorite videos, test them before the emergency. That's the biggest key. Always test your emergency stuff and check out every so often. Go in there and look at everything. Make sure everything's still good. Your batteries are still good. You know, do some preventive maintenance ahead of time. And what I was mentioning about the blankets earlier, they sell these vacuum seal bags where you can put a blanket in there, and it also you know, help to save space because it sucks it all down flat, and then whenever you open the bag up, everything puffs back out. It's pretty impressive technology, but you can fit a lot of blankets in a smaller space by doing that, and you can keep them dry and clean until you need them. So then whenever all heck breaks loose and your power's out and you don't know when it's coming back on, you at least got a way to stay warm. And during the summertime, you know, when the power goes out, it's not necessarily so bad because you can go outside and sit underneath the shade tree and be all right. But if you do have to be inside or have somebody who maybe can't get outside, you can keep them cool by learning about evaporated cooling systems, which don't require a compressor like a regular air conditioner. And even to the extent of if you had to run an air conditioner, that you could understand by using an air conditioner in a little bit more efficient manner, you can help to keep that room cooler. For example, most people put window units in their window. Well, with a few modifications prior to ever even putting an air conditioner in, if you take that air conditioner and you cut a hole in the wall in the side of your house and frame it in real nice and everything, and put that air conditioner up on the ceiling, now that doggone thing's going to be a whole lot more efficient than it would have otherwise. It would have to run more if it was in that window than it would be if it was up there towards the ceiling. So, you know, even if you was to modify it and put it in your attic.
It may sound a little bit silly, but if, in an emergency situation, if you had electricity, but you didn't have heat in your house, you know, all you have to do is pull your dang old window unit out, turn it around, put the front of it outside, the back inside, and turn it on, it'll heat your house.
Yeah. There are actually air conditioners that you can buy that are a combination.
But you don't have heat.
Huh?
It will heat your house.
Yeah. There are dual-purpose air conditioners that you can buy that's combination heater and air conditioner. And basically, all it does is what you just explained. It essentially turns the air conditioner backwards, you know, vent-wise. And so it pumps the heat in and the cold out. All it's looking for is a temperature difference.
I got one in my office right now.
So, there's some options available. Let me play a little bit more of this podcast here from this guy, the tiny house.
Definitely something to consider. We have met some people living in tiny houses that have a fireplace, but they also have a supplement
shop. So you be good. Take care of it. Hello, all you people out there. Take care. Bye. All
right. Peace. All right. So let's go again.
Mental heat that is set onto a thermostat, and it kicks in when the temperature goes below a certain amount. So they'll have a propane system or an electric system. Another thing to consider with a fireplace is the size. Nowadays they make a bunch of different options, mini little stoves for boats and tiny houses that work great. We've seen some miniature ones that can still heat up a tiny house in a really cold winter, no problem. But the thing to keep in mind here is that the smaller it is, the smaller the pieces of wood that you can put in there. So you can't put in a huge log that'll burn for several hours like you would in a regular wood stove. You're going to have to maintain it more regularly. Also, every wood stove requires a certain amount of clearance between the stove and any other surface in your tiny house for safety reasons. So even though you can find really small wood stoves, they're still going to take up a certain amount of space in your tiny house when you consider the clearance that needs to be around them. There are some bigger stove options, like the Morisou stove, that have their own built-in heat shield. So with this, you can get a bigger stove that doesn't need to be right in the middle of your tiny house. But this stove, the Morisou, for example, is quite a bit more expensive than the smaller options. The next option we're going to talk about are propane heaters. And the main benefits of propane are that you can be off-grid, and also you can get propane heating systems that can be thermostat controlled. So you set the desired temperature, it turns on and off by itself, so you can leave your tiny house and you know that a certain temperature will be maintained, your pipes aren't going to freeze, and also while you're living in it, it's really low maintenance. You can even go to bed at night. You don't have to wake up to feed a fire, and it's just kind of running itself. The drawbacks of propane are that, well, some people don't like the idea of burning gas in their tiny house. And obviously the propane costs something. You have to go and get your propane tank filled up or exchanged. And they're usually really big and pretty heavy, and that's just an extra task that you have to do. So if you are going to go with propane heat, make sure you get a direct vent unit. So those are units that exhaust fumes and vapors directly to the outside of the house. Also, definitely try to get a thermostat-controlled unit, because I think that is the main benefit of propane, is that you can be off-grid and also have a unit that's thermostat-controlled. Next option we're going to talk about is electric heating. Electric heating can be great if you're planning to be on the grid. So maybe you're parked in someone's driveway where you have access to power, or you're on a piece of land where you do have access to power. It can be a great low-cost option. You can get portable units like ceramic heaters, and there's also a few good options now for small baseboard heaters and wall-mounted heaters that are thermostat-controlled. A good example is this NV panel heater. It's really flat and takes very little space when mounted on the wall, and we've seen a few people really enjoy this in their tiny house. Electric heat is just a great option if you plan to be on the grid. It's cost effective and really low maintenance. Next is in-floor radiant heat. So you can have systems that are in the floor or under the floor. And these are electric, so they're great if you're going to be plugged onto the grid. What's great about in-floor heating is that it doesn't take up any precious space in your tiny house. It's just in the floor. So you don't have a furnace, a fireplace, a radiator. It's just a great space saver. And it's apparently also one of the most comfortable ways to heat up a tiny house. We met a woman who spent several cold winters in her tiny house, and in-floor heating was her only source of heat, and she just loved it. It's probably more comfortable because you're actually heating up the floor, so the structure of your tiny house, so the actual house is getting hotter, as opposed to just blowing hot air in the tiny house, for example. So in-floor radiant heat can be a great, comfortable, space-saving alternative, but you do have to be plugged onto the grid. Last thing we're going to talk about is supplementing with a solar air heater. Basically, a solar air heater is a very simple design. It's a dark glass casing with a series of pipes on the inside. It's mounted to the outside of your tiny house facing south, and it basically captures energy from the sun and turns it into hot air inside the casing. There's a small fan hooked up to a small solar panel on the system, and it just blows that hot air into the tiny house and helps supplement the heat. What's interesting is that on the coldest winter days, it's usually really sunny outside, and that's when you're using up your heating system the most. So it's nice to have something like this that can supplement your main system. We actually met a guy who spent a whole winter in his tiny house in a really cold area of Canada, and this kind of system worked so well for him that he only spent $100 for the whole winter on his electric heating. Something really important that you're going to want to do, especially if you go with a wood-burning stove, but it can also really help with any other option, is that you're going to want to build your house with really good insulation. Try to seal it as much as possible, seal the envelope as much as possible, and install a heat recovery ventilation unit. To simplify, a heat recovery ventilation unit is a system that allows fresh air to get into your house and stale air to exit the house without losing too much energy. So it basically takes the hot air from inside your house and uses that hot air to heat up the cold air coming in, the fresh cold air coming in. So with this type of system, you lose very little energy, but you still get fresh air coming into your tiny house. And if you build your tiny house like this, it's going to be so much more comfortable to live in cold climates. Your temperature fluctuations are not going to be as drastic or as quick, and it's just going to be a much more pleasant environment to live in. You're also going to burn less wood. You're going to use up less electricity or propane. It's just going to be way more economical and way more comfortable in the long run. So thanks for watching. I hope this video was helpful. If you want to see more stories of people experiencing tiny house living, talking about the pros and cons, check out our playlists. There's plenty of great content there. Give this video a thumbs up if you liked it. And don't forget to subscribe. We post a new video every single week.
Cool. So there's a lot of good resources out there on the YouTube, on the internet. Stephen posted a link in there, the Taurus 6000 ecological portable recycling plant, the Taurus 6000 crude oil, burnt oils, fat contamination, environmental recycling, rubber, tire plastic, ecological, I can't even pronounce that half the time, I don't know what's wrong with my brain. But anyway, basically recycle stuff, a portable recycling plant for generation of biodiesel fuels and electricity by recycling of crude oils, burnt fats, and oils contaminated land environments due to oil spill, car tires, I guess, I don't know, or plastics through closed loop production technology and production system. Anyway, Steven's posted a link over there in the chat room to that if you want to go read it. My brain is half asleep and With all the technical difficulties, I've been distracted as all get out today. Phew, I even got a headache, so if that helps. So anyway, let's go back down through the list again. That's getting redundant, I guess. Alright, so blankets, top of the list, for if it's hot outside, no, cold outside. That one's going to be a plus, and you can, you know, store them creatively and be able to save space, but still have enough blankets, and even those little Mylar blankets that they have for survival heating or whatever. Candles, rubbing alcohol, food that don't have to be refrigerated, modified appliances, which we were talking about, instead of running your refrigerator during the winter time, you could actually pipe in that cold air from outside, and even if you want to get fancy about it, build it so that you can regulate the temperature so that it won't get too cold. You don't want all your stuff freezing in your refrigerator. What in tarnation's going on here? So you could actually have this thing self-regulate the temperature, and you know, be able to keep your stuff in there or whatever temperature you want. And then that falls under the modified appliances, which if you want to run a fan or something like that, there's different methods. Basically, you get your voltage down, 12 volt fan instead of you know, regular 12 volt DC fan instead of a regular 110 volt AC version of it or whatever. That you know, maybe you can modify a larger fan to run off of a fan motor that you got out of an old automobile or something like that. Those 12 volt fans like you got in your heater in your car, those put out a lot of heat. Now, if you can find old vans and stuff like that that have a heater core system that's all the fans built into it and the heater systems built into it, that heater core system could also be doubled as an air conditioner during the winter time or during the summertime, because whatever temperature is in that heater core is going to be transferred out. So imagine you got you got an old heater core system out of an old bus or something like that. It's got a nice nifty little package, and it basically takes water out of your radiator and circulates it through there. You modify this up to where you got a tank, and you boil water in that tank, and you can circulate that temperature from that tank into the deal and blow heat out inside your deal. So you could have your wood-burning stove outside, heat the antifreeze outside in the tank, and then run it through a radiator system and be able to heat your inside of your house without having any fire inside your house. And during the summertime, you can cool that tank down and circulate cold air through, cold water through that same exact radiator, and now you got basically a cheap old air conditioner. Now, is it going to be as fancy as the one that you had prior? No, probably not going to be nowhere near like a regular air conditioner. But if you had like a cooling tank where you could actually throw ice in there, if you had a way to get some ice and keep that water inside that ice cold, that'll be a plus as well. And then you can also use evaporative cooling systems as well. They have a little miniature toy version. Look up evaporative coolers, and you'd be surprised how simple they are, designed, and be able to replicate it on a little bit larger scale to where you're essentially using water as it's evaporating to blow, a little bit of air across and keep things cool. So both heat and cold, there are solutions. There's solutions to everything out there. So that's under the modified appliance deal. First aid, common sense, medicines that you need or whatever, medicines just in case, or band-aids and all that kind of stuff that you would basically take for granted, because during the normal time you can just go to the doggone grocery store and buy what you need, or maybe go to the doctor and get medical attention. So a good book on first aid, first responder kind of stuff, that would be a plus to have around, or download some videos on some how-tos. So worst case scenario, you can watch this video and know how to do something. And the more information you can store up, the better. You know, not everybody can remember all these things. And so with that said, you want to pre-plan just for just such an emergency, because it'd be terrible to not have the knowledge when you needed it for, you know, one of your loved ones is sick or something and you don't know what to do. You know, that would be bad. So get a game plan going on. Everybody write down things that you normally take for granted, things that you might need, lighting sources, communication sources, water supplies. And mention it again, water supply, one of the water supplies in pretty much every household is that you got a hot water tank. Now, depending on the shape of your hot water tank, once again, you might have to filter that water out before you use it for drinking or anything like that. And they make really wonderful water filtration systems nowadays. Some of them are like these Brita water filter pitchers that you can get. Those work out pretty well. I got a friend that they use water out of a cistern, and that's the only water supply they got. They fill it up every so often. They'll go up to the city and buy a tank of water and then bring it down here and pump it into their cistern deal. And so they will, instead of just drinking that water directly, run it through a filtration system, and they do real well with it. So you want to be able to store information, radio communications, water filtration, and water supply. And my advice is, if you don't necessarily have to have it, don't put those blue tablets in your doggone the toilet tank where you use the cooler or something like that. And you go to the hardware store and buy you some sort of air duct, like an old dryer duct or something like that. And an adapter, and cut a hole in the top of that doggone cooler, and pipe air, cold air out from outside inside. Because even during the winter time, like I mentioned earlier, is that you can spoil your food if your refrigerator isn't staying running, because every time you open that door, it lets the room temperature in, and eventually it won't be cold enough to keep your food cold. But if it's colder than heck outside, then you might as well monopolize on the cold weather and use that to save yourself some power. So there's some ideas that route. And during the summertime, always remember, heat rises, cold air falls. So find the lowest spot in your house if you can. Build you a root cellar or something like that, and keep it as cool as possible. Take some time, go talk to some of the Amish folks and ask them how they did their ice sheds and stuff, their ice boxes and stuff like that, where they actually had stored ice from the winter time. In some instances, back in the old days, they used to have ponds that were specifically for going out cutting ice on. And they'd cut this ice into blocks, and then they'd put it in their refrigerators, and that's how they'd keep things cool without having electricity and such. So there's some options available there. And even if you had, some areas have, water supplies around, like the river or creeks, or even spring fed. You know, anybody who's ever been around spring fed water knows that water stays really super cold. You can transfer that cold through into your house too as well, basically recirculating that water out of the spring, cold spring, through a cooling system, and basically keeping your house cool using something nature's already provided. And if you do it in a environmentally friendly manner, you won't be polluting the spring while you're doing it. But that's an option. So the whole yeah, it's live. Say hi to Scottish Sovereign down there in the TCT chat room. So there are lots of options available. What you have to go around and take inventory. what your environment has to offer, and even go to that doggone website, eattheweeds.com. You'd be surprised at what all kinds of stuff that you would normally think is just a weed that have either health benefits or pain relief kind of medicines or whatever. A lot of different things that you wouldn't normally think you could eat are basically edible. So, there's another thing that you'd want to throw on your list for if you ain't got the grocery store version of the deal and you don't live next to a farming community and there ain't no way to get to the store. You know what's in your environment, what all types of plants are edible, which ones are not edible. And even the ones that are not edible could actually be turned into fuel so that you could, stay warm. And if you understand about heat transfer systems, you could actually turn heat into cool. So by going and studying up a little bit about how heating and cooling air conditioners work, HVAC, where you pressurize a gas and then allow that gas to expand rapidly, it produces in physics a cooling effect. That's how your air conditioner actually functions, transfers heat from one side to the another or whatever. It's really interesting stuff, but you have to know about all that stuff ahead of time. So let me think here. Man, I think I've pretty much been over the majority of everything so far. Inventory your resources. That's what I just talked about. Knowing if you got some good neighbors, that's a resource. Some they can help you out during rough times like that, and you can help them out vice versa. And maybe you got a generator and you don't need all the power. You could help share, store batteries for them or whatever. Share some power with them. And then, talk about the power storage, batteries, capacitors, all these different ways to store power. The modern day capacitors are getting really good. They're the what they call boost caps, or what was the other name for them? Super capacitors. There's different names for some of these different types of capacitors out there, but they act more like a battery than they do, actual capacitors. But nonetheless, that's more information to look into. For if you've listened to the show prior, you've heard me talk about them many times. So power storage is a good thing, and energy storage in general. You can store electricity, you can store air pressure, you can store heat, and all these different things right here. If you know what types of materials do the best job, iron, for example, what I mentioned in that wood-burning stove, if you have that big old steel plate inside there, then that's going to be able to store some heat energy that you could then in turn, actually turn into electricity if you wanted, using things like the Seebeck effect with the Peltier elements, thermocouples, thermopiles, all these types of things right here built into a system to where your actual wood-burning stove might be a dual-purpose kind of thing, maybe a triple-purpose. Doggone it, that means that my internet keeps dropping. Ain't that crazy? Well, we're almost to the bottom of the show anyway. I don't know what's going on, folks. I got some issues with my power, I guess, and I got some issues with the doggone internet. So I'll have to go out and check out on all that. It just drives me nuts. Technology. Yeah, I'm in and out. But we'll have a good podcast. Dad, bless it. I pushed the wrong button. Yeah, this is terrible. Okay, this is insane. Alright, so I keep dropping my doggone stream. Somebody's probably using up bandwidth doing what they ain't supposed to be doing in the other room, using the internet, and so looks like I'm gonna Another one of these episodes. I'm going to put on a quick song and go yell at some people. Do-do-do-do. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.